This show is a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, the Justice League of board game podcasts. Find out more at dicetower.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 265.
Hello, hello everyone. We are excited to bring another show to you. It is an odd numbered show. We have an odd number of guests. We have super mega special guests this week.
Yes.
Yeah. We're going to, you know what? We're going to hide our super special guests until the second half of the show.
All right. No, let's do that.
It's going to be great. All right. We are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
And I had a really hard time, once again, finding a fact for this episode.
Please help.
I had to crowdsource this one again. My fact for this week's show deals with a very recent world record that was set.
Yeah, I started looking up numbers, too, and I found the same world record.
Uh-huh. The current world record in the clean and jerk, which is not me. I am a clean jerk, but no, I'm just kidding. The clean and jerk, which is a weightlifting move.
Yes.
It was set at the Tokyo Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
And it is 265 kilograms.
That's a lot of kilograms.
That is a lot. That translates to about 585 pounds.
That's like three people.
Yeah, it's a lot. The guy who did it is very large.
He's unsurprisingly.
A big man. I'm hopeful that he likes to play board games. So it makes it relevant to the show. But
sure.
That is pretty much the fact that I could find. And that's my fact about the number 265.
I'll take it.
All right. All right, will you tell me an interesting fact about First Move Financial?
I can do that. Did you know that you can talk to our sponsor, First Move Financial, for free?
What?
I know. I hear you yelling at your podcast device. Hasn't that always been the case? Apparently, some of our listeners have had a little bit of confusion. First Move is a fee-only firm, which means that until you sign on as a client, you're not paying to talk to them. Speaking of the fee, we mentioned before that it's different than other advisors. It is. Instead of focusing solely on clients that already have millions of dollars saved, First Move wants to be able to help younger clients as well that have more income than savings. Their fee is based on your income and your net worth, not on how much you invest with them. If you're curious what it would cost to get help from First Move, you can visit firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers and scroll down. There's a calculator there where you enter your income and your net worth, and it will tell you your estimated monthly fee if you sign on with First Move Financial.
Thanks so much to First Move for sponsoring the show. And I think you'll find, if you go in there and punch in the numbers, that it's a lot more reasonable than you think. So
you should do it.
So before we get into our topic, which is this week, spooky games, it is top five family games for Halloween, which is really just five favorites that we have.
Five family gamers favorites.
Right, and by the way, keep in mind, like, this is family weight games that we play with our kids. So, like, Betrayal at the House on the Hill, it's a fine game. It's not a family game. So it's not on our list,
yeah.
Right? You know, it's just stuff like that. There's some creepy stuff out there that we're just not playing. So just keep that in mind as you listen to our list. But before we get into that, we should probably talk about what we've been playing.
And before we get into that,
what?
I know, crazy. I'm going to recommend that if you listen to this whole podcast and you're like, I'm looking for something even younger, go back and find our old episodes on Halloween games. I will link all four of them to this episode. And the further back in time you go, the easier and more little kid friendly the games will get.
There you go. All right, well, I'm going to start off with a game that I have played an immense amount of time this week, even though I think we just got it on, like, Thursday.
I think it was Thursday.
We have been playing a ridiculous amount of Hero Hockey.
Okay, this game is kind of ridiculous.
So this is basically Clask meets foosball meets air hockey.
Yeah, but the big difference is that Clask and foosball and air hockey are all really big and really expensive.
This is $30, so it's not super expensive. It's not,
it's not super cheap.
Throwaway cheap. Right.
But it's a reasonable price for a, kids or family board game, and it's not huge.
Right. Yeah, and it collapses too. Like, yeah. It folds up pretty small. So this is a game where you have, it's a two-player game, right?
Yes, two players only.
There is a little player on this hockey field, I guess. And you have a magnet that you have underneath that's, I mean, it's a strong magnet, so it snaps onto the guy, so it connects basically through the table. And so you're moving around underneath the table, and you're moving your guy around on top of the table, and it's hockey, so he's got a little hockey stick.
Okay, he's got a little hockey stick, which looks more like a bat, in my opinion.
But, I kind of agree with you. But so if you think of those old, like, domed hockey games, like, that's what I think of. But, like, people don't really think of that. They think of things like foosball and air hockey.
Well, and this is more like an air hockey in that you can move your guy anywhere on your half of the field.
Yep. And essentially, I mean, there's a kind of like a little pit on your side in the middle, sort of like air hockey or something like that. And you have to try to get the ball by whacking it with your guy or with your guy's bat slash hockey stick thing or whatever into the other player's goal. And that's it. And there's certain things that are like hockey, like the ball can roll behind the goal. There's no stand up thing. So
there's
like you
no
can roll
net
behind
or
and
anything,
fall in.
Yeah.
So there's no net or anything like that. But it's just like you set it up and you don't even really have to explain the rules.
There is a little one page pamphlet of instructions, and most of it is how you set up the game.
Right.
Like how you put the thing together. And then it's like two sentences, I think,
I mean,
to explain
the only
what to
rule
do.
That's
everybody
worth
can tell.
Telling anybody is if you like disconnect your guy and you can't
reconnect it.
You can't reconnect it like without having to pick up your guy on top, you're supposed to award the other player a point.
Yeah. So for example,
that's pretty much it.
If you come too far back and your guy falls into the scoring pit, you have just scored the other team a point.
Pretty much, right. But there have been plenty of times where I'll disconnect my guy because I'm moving too fast or like jerking back and forth, and I'll be able to reconnect it and continue, and that's fine.
Yeah.
Of course, obviously, the other player is getting an advantage at that point because you can't move your dude around. But it's just an absolute blast. I mean, it's so fun. It's hilarious to play this thing. It's a great spectator game.
It's just
a ton of fun. This is from some brand of Asmodee.
One of the tiny branches of Asmodee.
Yeah, I hope this is going to be widely available for holiday. Like, it should be. I've been able to find it, but not easily on the internet. So, yeah. I mean, we'll talk about it some more. I know we're going to play it more because it pretty much just lives on the table at this point.
Pretty much.
But it's a great thing. You can pull it out for just a quick 10-minute game and just kind of blow off some steam to play hero hockey.
I will say right now that if this is widely available sometime in the next couple of weeks, it's going to make it onto our holiday gift idea list because this is one that will get opened and immediately the kids will start playing with.
Yeah, this is very much the kind of gift. Like, there's different kinds of gifts. There's gifts where it's like you open it and you're like, this is awesome. And then you put it aside and you move on with your Christmas morning.
Yeah, this
like,
one this, is not one of those.
This is the gift that you open it and you're like, this is awesome. And then you take it apart and you play it. And, you know.
Yeah, and if it's not the last present, at some point parents are like, hey, guys, you need to put that away.
Yeah, or it's like, hey, I'm going to go get some coffee.
I mean, I like that too.
That's what we're going to do. So anyway, so that is Hero Hockey. It's a just super fun.
Well, early in the week, I was playing some more of Grove, a 9-card solitaire game, before we had to send on our review copy to somebody else.
Tears.
It made me so sad. Yeah. So Grove is on Kickstarter right now.
Yes. You will hear about Grove during the break of the show.
Yes.
So and I'm then not you should go to Kickstarter and... Well, I don't like telling people to back things, so I'm going to say you should think about backing it.
If you or someone in your life really likes fast, compact solo games, you should go back it. If you are not interested in those things, this game is not for you.
Agree. You know, one thing we got in this week, which I'm very excited about, is we got in The Pumpkin Problem.
Yes.
And I do want to talk about this briefly. We didn't play it yet, but... We've talked about these holiday hijinks games. These are 18-card kind of escape room games from Grand Gamers Guild. We ordered a copy of The Pumpkin Problem for us to play as a family during this holiday season. If you order it right now, you can get it from Grand Gamers Guild, probably in time for Halloween. But also, because we've talked about these before, you can buy the set. I think it's $25, maybe, for the set of all three.
The Kringle Caper,
the
Independence
Incident, and the Pumpkin Problem.
I love these alliterative names.
holiday high drinks.
Yes.
So those are available now. And we did order The Pumpkin Problem. I'm really looking forward to playing this. I can't really speak to it because we haven't played it yet. And we're only going to play it the one time. But
yeah, once again, highly recommend any of these really as stocking stuffers. Mm-hmm. Like the Kringle Caper is the most Christmassy, but really the other two don't seem to be particularly like they're super tied to the holiday. It's more of a general.
I mean, I feel like the Independence Incident is kind of a July 4th-y kind of thing. And I feel like The Pumpkin Problem is a harvest time frame kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they don't have to be. I mean, even the Kringle Caper doesn't really have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're great. And like Anitra said, like if there is a couple in your life and you're like, I don't really know what to get these people, buy them the set. And
yeah,
then they have something to do together.
Yeah.
It's great. Totally. It's great stocking stuffer.
All right. But back to games that we've actually been playing.
Yes.
I played some more Zombie Kids Evolution with our kids.
Oh, yeah. They're not done with it, huh?
Well, there's a couple of ongoing challenges, like extra challenges at the end of the book, I guess, or that are come on cards at the end that you want to beat with two players and with three players and with four players. So they've beaten everything they can with two players. So they pulled me in to try one of the three player challenges and we lost.
Womp, womp.
But it was fun.
Mm-hmm. It's a very cute little fun game. At some point we'll end up with Zombie Teens Evolution, I am sure. And we'll talk about that when we play it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be behind the times on that one too, because you know that one's already been out and played and all that other stuff.
So. Yeah, well.
Next game on my list is a game that we got in for review last week. This is the game Land vs. Sea from Good Games.
Oh man, this game was so good.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. There's a lot of different module kind of things that you can play in this game. Mm-hmm. And the way we played the three-player, do you call it a variant version? Like we played it with the three-player rules.
Well, you played it first with the two-player rules.
We did, yes. So this is a tile-laying game. It reminds me a lot of Akrotiri / Carcassonne. Those are the two things, because a lot of it is making ocean and land versus sea.
Yeah.
So it's got the feel of Akrotiri in terms of like the style of the maps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But really, it's like a Carcassonne style game where you're trying to create like complete ocean units or complete land units.
Yes, but even within that, the Carcassonne type feel, Carcassonne doesn't have the asymmetric roles that you see here,
right,
in Land versus Sea. I mean, it's right in the name. Like one player plays as land, the other player plays as the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're trying to do your stuff and block the other player from getting their stuff.
So when you play this at two players, it's exactly that. One is the land, one is the sea, and then you're kind of going back and forth. You can play it nice, where you're just trying to do your stuff. You can play it a little mean if you want to. I played with Asher. He's so into like the coolness of the mechanics that it's kind of easy to play mean against him. So I tend to play nice when I'm playing with him.
Sure.
Just a little bit less cutthroat. So that's two players. At four players, you're playing essentially the same thing, but in teams.
Yeah, almost bridge-like in that it's land, sea around the table.
Right.
And there's supposed to be pretty minimal communication between teammates. We don't know in practice how this works out because we haven't tried it at four players yet.
But we did try it in three players.
Three players was amazing. Like, you and Asher sat down and you kind of explained to me like, well, this is what it was like at two players. I have no idea how they're going to put a third player in here and make it work. I was shocked.
We got a third of the way through the game and I'm like, this is not balanced. What is this?
And when you said that, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, you're not paying attention to the other ways I get points.
Yeah. So in three player, you have the land and you have the sea, but then you have this other character, a disembodied role of the cartographer. So if you play with them in two player, there's a bunch of other modules. I kind of mentioned this before. Some of them are like, if you put basically caravans together, you can score points for caravans. Or if you put coral together, you can score points for coral. Or if you put mountain ranges together, you can score points for mountain ranges. So you can do this in the two-player mode. We didn't do it when we played because we were trying to like simple, like figure the game out, whatever. But you need those in the three-player mode, which is fine.
You have to in the three-player mode because the cartographer gets their points off of making mountain ranges and coral things.
Mm.
There are bonus points when you finish off a land or a sea, and those bonus points go to whoever did it
Right. Well, that's true, no matter what.
Right. But that's true in the game all the time. Yeah. But that does help even it out a little bit with the cartographer to be like, you know what? You're going to get 4 points for this, but I'm also going to get 2. So maybe it's worth it. Worth it so that you don't get 6 points when you finish it off yourself.
Sure.
But then the last thing was these trade routes. So with the trade routes, normally it's sort of it's designed to be sort of a back and forth. Like at the end of the game, every trade route is examined. And if it has more little land caravans in it, land gets the points for it. If it has more little boats in it, sea gets the point. With the cartographer wants these trade routes to be exactly perfectly balanced. Equal number of ships and land caravans. And so I managed to do that with 2 different caravan areas, and that was enough to bump my points up and pass you guys at the very end of the game.
Well, the other thing that's really, really interesting is that when you're playing a 3-player game with a cartographer, any mountain ranges and any coral gets scored to the cartographer, whether or not the cartographer created them with their tiles.
Right.
So there's a whole extra thing that the land and sea people have to pay attention to when they're playing, because normally it would be good for me to put coral together if I'm the sea, or it would be good for me to put mountain ranges together if I'm the land. But in a 3-player game, you don't really want to do that because it's going to give the other player points. And so it's just another extra thing to think about, which is not bad.
To be fair, you guys didn't really put together mountains or coral very often at all. You just didn't always block me from being able to add to
them. Well, it absolutely impacted what we were able to do.
Sure.
In the game, because we were trying to avoid doing those things.
Right.
Right. So, but it was really, really interesting. And then, like you said, you did end up kind of eking out the victory on that one. But there's just a lot of layers in that game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're really, really interested in that. We also got another game in to review called Small Islands from Lucky Duck Games. Mm-hmm. And we sent that to another reviewer at the Family Gamers because we were like, 2 tiling games about islands and
we need a little bit more distance from that.
Yeah. Because we know we're going to play this one a lot more.
Yeah.
So. So that's Land versus Sea.
All right. Let me talk about the other new game we have, which is King Domino Origins. I posted about this on Saturday. You and I had opened the box and taken a look at it. We're like, no, I'm too tired. I'm not ready. I'm not ready for new rules in King Domino right now.
I had a long day. I finished the long day with a drink, and then I opened the game, and I was like, no.
No.
Never mind. Just kidding.
However, part of that is because King Domino Origins has 3 different modes of play. And they suggest that you start off with like the simplest one and kind of onboard you to more complicated ones. So Asher and I played the simplest one. It's called Discovery Mode. King Domino Origins is your same King Domino, except there aren't really kingdoms now. It's regions with like cave dwellers on them. And you're looking for comfort points, which is campfires times the number of squares in a region.
Okay.
Here's the thing. There are tiles that already have campfires on them, just like the crowns. There are also volcanoes.
Volcanoes are not comforting.
Volcanoes are not comforting, and the volcanoes themselves cannot score any points. Volcanoes are not a region, quote-unquote, that you can get points for, because they're not comfortable.
Sure.
However, when you place a volcano, it launches a campfire up to a certain distance away.
Okay.
And you get to decide where that campfire is going to go, as long as it's within the right radius. So you can use those to put fires on something that normally is like super common, but doesn't usually have a lot of fires on it.
Okay, sure.
So like the plains from the original game. And that's super useful. I kind of destroyed our son in this because he was playing it more like traditional King Domino.
Sure.
And I saw the possibilities here very quickly.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun. Apparently, the other modes have something to do with like resources that come out on the tiles. And then you can either play a version where the resources themselves are worth points, or the most complex version, you can turn the resources in to buy villagers who then have special powers.
Okay.
So I'm interested to see where this goes. But I like that the simplest mode really did feel just like King Domino plus a little bit.
Mm. Sure. Yeah. I mean, we're having conversations in the Family Gamers community right now about somebody was asking about should I get Castle Panic or my first Castle Panic? And we kind of were talking in that chat thread about, well, I mean, your kids are going to grow up. So like which one's going to have the longevity and these kind of things. So, you know, this really sounds like if you haven't played King Domino and you're looking for a little bit extra, like previously the answer was, oh, go get Queen Domino.
Right.
And then you're going to have to move on into different IPs. And it sounds like the answer now might be King Domino Origins, because it's OG King Domino with a little bit of a twist, and then layers on top of that.
And then layers on top of that. So you can still play a game that looks very much like your traditional King Domino, or you can play a game that does a whole bunch more.
Right. That's really interesting.
I thought that was really cool.
Next on my list is a game that we played together, because I guess most of the time we're playing together. But,
the family that games together?
Yeah, something like that. So we pulled out a lot of our spooky games for this show, right? And also because it's the right time of year. And we sat down as a family and we played Horrified.
That was a lot of fun. It was so much fun. We lost track of time, which does not happen often. Right.
Yes. Yeah, we managed to defeat the Invisible Man and Dracula. We were successful in our quest. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think everybody at the table had different degrees of fun as they went along. So, so it was good. It was Horrified from Ravensburger. It's a really nice cooperative game. A little bit asymmetric in terms of player powers, but you're all trying to fend off the Universal Studios monsters.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those
different ones when you start the game, so it doesn't always feel like the same thing.
Well, it's one of those things where the player powers are all geared back towards how can I help the team with this power. So that's always good.
Yep. So that's Horrified.
All right. I think I've only got one more game on my list. Along with those spooky games, Asher and I played some Unmatched Goblin Fog.
Which is great.
He was the Invisible Man, and I was Sherlock Holmes and Watson.
All right.
I took full advantage this time around. And we talked about this a little bit with Chris Leader.
We did.
I was just like, you know what? Yes, I am going to take full advantage. I'm going to be Sherlock. I'm going to guess what you have. I'm going to make you show me your hand. All kinds of stuff. And I won, but a lot more narrowly than I thought I was
going to. You know, I feel like that's just how Unmatched is. If you have players that kind of understand the way that Unmatched is played,
yeah,
there's a couple of characters, I think, that you could say, like, maybe this one's generally a little bit less powerful than that one over there. But for the most part, they did an incredible job keeping them balanced.
They are, in fact, very well matched.
Yes. All right. So that is everything that we have been playing. Before we take our break, I do want to take a chance to remind everyone to head over to the Family Gamers website at thefamilygamers.com. There is a giveaway that is going on right now for a copy of the deluxe Kickstarter edition of Haunt the House from Kids Table Board Games.
Yeah, including the expansion.
Mm-hmm. So we released a review for this last week, and KTBG was kind enough to donate a copy to give away as part of this whole thing. So we are overjoyed to be able to work with them to do this. Thank you very much to Kids Table Board Games for putting this up for us. Head over to thefamilygamers.com to enter that contest. And if you don't even want to wait, if you don't even want to take the chance, because we're only giving away one copy and we have many, many, many entries, the game is also on sale for 50% off.
50% off!
So, it's $20-something. Again, deluxe Kickstarter edition of the game with the expansion. Mm-hmm. And there's even like an extra throw-in right now. So if you head over to
KidsTableBG.com.
There you go. You will definitely see that sale. It is the right time of year to pick up that game. Head over there and you will find Haunt the House.
All right. So I think that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to take a quick break and tell you a whole bunch more about Grove. And then we'll come back and talk about spooky games.
All right. Sounds good. We'll be right back.
I'm a mom who loves to play board games, so I really enjoy solitaire games that are very compact and very fast, so I can play them while I'm waiting around for my kids. Because of this, I'm delighted to review Grove. Grove is a solitaire card placement game that uses dice to track your progress through the puzzle. It's a sequel to Orchard, which is another solitaire game. Both of them were designed and illustrated by Mark Tuck. Grove is published by Sideroom Games. Inside the box, you'll find 18 cards, 15 custom dice, and 2 tokens, a squirrel and a wheelbarrow. So let's talk about the art. The art in Grove
plays really well into the compactness of the game. You have these little bushes. Every bush has one or two little citrusy fruit. And every card has an open grove. The illustrations on the back of each card have more information and more things you can do, but they could have been a little bit more richly illustrated. They don't seem to quite fit with the look that's on the front of the cards. There are 18 cards here, but you only use half the deck for any given game. Start by laying down a card at random to be your starting card, and then draw a hand of two cards from the eight that you have left. Play one card from your hand onto the table. You need to overlap matching types of trees to either place or upgrade a die based on the total number of fruit that are now held on that tree. Then you draw a new card and do it again. The dice values climb from 2 all the way up to 6, and then they upgrade to a bushel of 10 fruit. If you actually manage to upgrade a die that already shows a bushel, you can use the wheelbarrow token to show you got a really good haul. You're always allowed to overlap the empty grove spaces with trees of any kind. You can also overlap non-matching trees once in the game by using the squirrel token. But that'll subtract points from your end score, so use it wisely. But wait, that's not all. As I mentioned, on the back of every card is a recipe challenge. Pick two of those from the unused 9 cards when separating out the deck to play. If you fulfill the condition on each card, you'll get bonus points, but the two cards combined will also give you the score you need to beat to win the game. So what did I expect from Grove? I knew it was a sequel to Orchard, which I've seen around, but I never got a chance to play. I'd seen lots of pictures of it, and that idea of the card placement with dice as counters was really cool. But I had no idea what to expect other than you lay cards and there's dice that get placed on top. I was a little surprised that you never actually roll the dice. You only use them as upgrade counters. You count how many fruit you have on a specific tree space. But they work really well for that purpose. I was also surprised by the recipe challenges and the variable goals. I love this mechanic. It's great in Sprawlopolis, one of my other favorite solo games. It exists in a few other games as well. It's a really great way to use all of the card space in a really small game like this that has 18 cards or fewer. The way that you set up this game, where you immediately set aside half the deck, almost guarantees that you'll want to play twice in a row. This really is just designed to be a solo game, and there is a way to play it with other people if they haven't enjoyed the solo game as well. I highly recommend Grove. It plays in 10 minutes or less. It's small enough to fit in a purse if you're a mom like me, or a big pocket like cargo shorts or in a coat or something. My only disappointments with it at all are that the art could be just a little bit more detailed, and I really wish there was a way to play with two players right out of the box. Other than that, Grove is a great game, and I'm going to give it 4.5 fruit out of 5. And that's Grove in a snap.
All right, we are back from our break. So we, on this odd episode, this Halloween odd episode, wanted to make sure that we continued our tradition of having an odd number of people on the show. So we've done that.
Yes. Instead of having one guest, we have 3. Welcome the Family Gamers kids.
That's right. We have Elliot.
Hello.
We have Asher.
Hi.
And we have Claire.
Hello.
So here's what we thought we would do. Because, like, top fives is a thing, right? I mean, everybody likes top fives.
Sure.
So we're going to do 5 Halloween games from the 5 members of the Family Gamers family. What do you think of that?
So each one of us will do one game. All right.
All right. So why don't we... So this isn't necessarily a ranked highest to lowest. We're going to go youngest to oldest on this one.
So you're going last. Got it.
You know, you don't have to mention that. I really don't appreciate that.
Hey, and I get to go first.
Yes, you do, Ellie. You get to go first. Okay, so here we go. So we kind of talked about some of the games that we've been playing on the first half of the show, and some of those are going to come up here, unsurprisingly. Elliot, if you could pick one game to play for Halloween, what would that game be?
Horrified.
Why would you pick Horrified?
Because the first time I tried it, it was really fun. And then I was like, oh, I want to play this again. And then we played it again a couple weeks later. And then we, like, stopped playing it for, like, a 2 years.
Well, a little bit of time. I mean, it's a game that's Halloween-themed or spooky-themed, so we like to play it around this time of year.
Also that.
So tell me something that you actually like about Horrified.
I like that there's, like, a bunch of different monsters, and also that there's Dracula, and you hit coffins.
You like the smashing of the coffin to kill Dracula?
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, you like that part. I like that Horrified is a cooperative game, so we're not trying to, like, kill each other in a spooky way.
We're all beating the monsters together.
Yeah, there's lots of spooky games that are out there, or spoopy games that are out there, that still involve, like, competition and trying to best one another. And this is a good cooperative game that involves us coming together and beating the Universal Monsters monsters.
Yeah.
So I like it a lot. And what game was that, Elliot?
Horrified.
All right. And Elliot is the youngest, so he has gone first. Next is Asher.
All right, Asher. So if you could pick one game to play for Halloween or the Halloween season, what would that game be?
It would probably be Unmatched Goblin Fog.
Funny, we played that not too long ago.
So we've talked about Unmatched Goblin Fog a bunch of times when we had Chris Leader on the show a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. He actually worked on Unmatched Goblin Fog. And so, you know, we talked about that a little bit. We talked about those characters that are in there. So the Invisible Man, Jekyll and Hyde, Sherlock Holmes, and, well, Dracula. And, of course, the last time we played Horrified, we had the Invisible Man and Dracula. So that kind of worked out.
Yeah, totally.
But so those are the guys in Goblin Fog. How, just out of curiosity, Asher, how does Goblin Fog as a set rate for you with all the Unmatched that you've played?
Well, my favorite character is, it has to be Bruce Lee.
Okay.
Most of the people that we have I like, but it's probably in the top two sets.
Okay.
Not right. Including Bruce Lee.
Not including Bruce Lee.
Well, Bruce Lee's not a set. He's a Bruce single Lee's, character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Fair.
All right. Well, you're a chip off the old block, and I appreciate that very much. So who's your favorite character in Unmatched Goblin Fog?
Basically the only one I ever use, which is the Invisible Man.
Okay. Why do you like him so much?
I don't know.
You like fading away onto the fog tokens and using the fog tokens to do extra damage.
Yeah. Teleportation, basically. Yeah.
And I, cool. And I just don't like the effects on the other... I don't like the special powers on the other people.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Reasonable.
All right. Awesome. So that is Unmatched Goblin Fog, which is the Halloween selection from Asher.
All right. So moving on up, it is time for our teenager to make her thoughts known.
Teenagers.
I say that just to make Daddy freak out.
Kind of like the old comment, thanks for nothing.
I like making you freak out over little things that don't
I mean, I don't think I'm freaking out, but, you know, ugh, old.
I like making you go, ugh.
Old.
Don't forget, you two are once teenagers, too.
So, Claire, if you were going to pick a game to play for a Halloween theme, what would you pick?
I would probably pick Shaky Manor.
Oh, we haven't talked about Shaky Manor in a while.
Yeah. So, what about Shaky Manor makes you think Halloween, and why would you choose that?
Well, a lot of the items in Shaky Manor are sort of Halloween-related, like spiders and snakes.
All right. A lot of creepy things in that game.
Yeah.
Talk about Shaky Manor a little bit. Like, what do you do in this game for those listeners who have not heard the review that we did of that game?
Shaky Manor is not like a lot of other board games. It's a game where you have a box with 8 squares, and there are little items in the box, like... For example, snakes and eyeballs, and you have to try to get specific items in specific rooms before time runs out.
Yeah, so the grid of 8 squares represent, like, different rooms in this manner, and you're literally picking the whole thing up and, like, shaking it around and trying to slide it and stuff and get certain stuff in certain rooms.
Yeah, I think there's some little meeples, too, and maybe, like, a skeleton.
All sorts of weird stuff. It's weird. I think there might actually be a video of us on Facebook playing this game.
I think there might.
Yeah. So that is Shaky Manor from Blue Orange Games. Cool. Well, thanks for a very different selection. It's not really a game that we've talked about a bunch lately, so I really appreciate that. Thank you, Claire.
I guess that means it's my turn, huh?
Yeah, you're not old enough to be the most aged and fine wine last one.
I'm not mature enough yet.
Something like that, yeah.
Well, I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. I would love for us to play The Grim Masquerade for Halloween.
Okay, it's a costume party.
It's a costume party, and it's all about unmasking each other.
Okay.
And so I really like that feature of it. I'm not a big fan of spooky and scary. Our kids will tell you,
I would not choose to decorate our house for Halloween at all, except we were given a bunch of stuff and kids decorate for Halloween.
I think that some of the stuff that really draws you to the Grim Masquerade is that it's such a logical game.
Yeah, this combination of fairy tale characters and a sort of logical deduction where there's all kinds of things you can do to affect your deduction or give yourself more information. But in the end, it all comes down to making use of the information you have and sometimes just taking a leap of faith of, I think you're the Rumpelstiltskin.
Right. Yeah, I mean, there is some social engineering involved in the game in general, but if you kind of weed out all of the chaff, like it is a cold deduction game.
It's logical deduction.
And so you just need to not let yourself be swayed by what other people's innocent faces might be looking like.
I'm a mom. I am never swayed by innocent faces.
Untrue. Just not kids' innocent faces. Anyway, all right. Well, I guess that does in fact leave me.
Yes, it is your turn.
All right.
Almost aged one.
Man, this is brutal. You guys, I need your help. If somebody can go to the Family Gamers community and comment about how mean Anitra is being and how as an elder I deserve to be revered, I would greatly appreciate it. But maybe that's not going to work out. Anyway, you know, my game on this one is going to be Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters. It's just a really light but also difficult cooperative game. You know, I like a cooperative game where at the end of it, if you win, like there are legitimate high fives of joy because
yes,
it was hard and you fought through and you made it. Like the last time we played Horrified, we played it on kind of an easier setting and I didn't feel like it was super hard. So like we won and we're like, yay, we won. But it wasn't like, guys, we did it. This is awesome. All right.
Like our winning was telegraphed a round or so.
Yeah. I mean, it was still fun to play, but because we didn't play it at a super difficult level, it didn't have as much of a rewarding feeling as I felt like it could have. That makes sense?
Yeah. And Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters, at least for our family, fits right in that sweet spot of, I think we win more often than we lose, but only barely.
And we don't play it on the hardest setting either.
Usually.
Yeah. But there's also an expansion, the Creeper Cellar expansion, which our kids are now hearing about for the first time. And so now they're rubbing chins. So, you know, that's something that has kind of been on my list to pick up at some point. So I know there's even more expandability in that game. And I just like it. I mean, I really like the idea that some genuinely good board games are coming to, you know, the big name publishers. I think Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters is Mattel. Yeah. I like that a lot. I mean, we've talked about Voltage in the past and how that is a Mattel game as well. So I think that's my pick. You know, it's relatively easy to find. It's relatively inexpensive. It's super fun. I mean, Horrified might have actually been my pick, but somebody already took that, Mr. Elliot. But, I mean, Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters is not far behind.
Yeah, well, and unlike some of the other ones we mentioned here, Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters is perfectly playable by kids who can't read.
Right. Yeah, Horrified is a little bit of an older kind of age range, like 7 or 8 is kind of the youngest. But Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters could go down to probably like 5, maybe a little bit.
Ghost Fighting Treasure Hunters is mostly about having a big enough attention span, a long enough attention span for it.
Right.
But it's pretty much, okay, you know, I roll the die, I flip the card, I do the thing. Okay. Like, I got it.
Right. All right. And that is our 5 games from the 5 members of the Family Gamers family for the Halloween season. So, Elliot, people can find us on Facebook. Did you know that?
Wait, what? They can?
They can. They can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok. Do you know what our handle is on social media?
No, I don't.
It is @FamilyGamersAA. You can go to all those places and it's the same name to find our stuff, @FamilyGamersAA. You can also go to the Family Gamers community and we made it really easy to get there. You can go to this website. What does that say?
TheFamilyGamers.com/community.
All right. Awesome. Thanks so much, Bud, for helping out. And, of course, you can always email either Anitra or myself, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com. Hey, Claire, did you know that we have Family Gamers merchandise?
I think she does because she wears the shirt.
I think she does, too.
But where do you get those shirts, Claire?
You can find cool shirts, hoodies, mugs, and a lot of stuff at thefamilygamers.com/merch.
And how are they, Claire? Are the t-shirts comfy?
Yes, definitely.
Please don't forget to subscribe to our show. Tell your friends and their kids about the show. And leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on Amazon Music, on TuneIn, on Stitcher, on Spotify, all of those places.
The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points.
Thanks again to First Move for sponsoring this episode.
All right, guys. Well, that is it for this week. Thank you, fine kidlets, for coming on the Family Gamers podcast. We appreciate it. Thanks for helping us pick 5 games for this Halloween season. So we're going to go upstairs and maybe we'll get another game ready to play.
Maybe.
All right. So until next week, everybody,
play games with your kids.